Good morning or good afternoon, wherever you're listening to us. This is Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Lots of news this week. And we are going to bring the very biggest news to you in the form of the voices, some of the people making news. In our first segment, we'll be speaking with NASA's chief climate scientist, James Hansen, who is calling for quick action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions or else. Then we'll check in with Peter Terzakian. He is going to be talking about a new book out on the oil breakpoint and the challenges we face. First, I want to recognize those who have made EcoTalk possible. EcoTalk is brought to you by Pet Ecology Brands, makers of Scientific Professional, the eco-friendly, ultra-lightweight cat litter that features a special patented sickness indicator. Pet Ecology's earth-friendly cat and dog products are inspired by pets, people, and our planet. And also want to thank our environmental partners making this show possible, the Natural Resources Defense Council, Earth Justice, and the Union of Concerned Scientists. In turning to our first guest now, Jim Hansen, you may say that name sounds familiar. Well, if you read the New York Times, and I hope you do, and you saw the front page of last Sunday's edition, you will recall that he is the longtime director of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies at NASA. He's been talking to some public audiences about the need for urgent action to curb our emissions, and he's being silenced a little bit by some of my members in the Bush administration, and including some people at NASA, perhaps. We're going to find out a little bit more about what's behind that. But first, we want to ask you, thank you for joining us. We know you had, I understand, more than 100 requests for media interviews, and we are honored and pleased that you chose EcoTalk to spend some time with.
Yeah, I'm glad to do that. But I need to comment, first of all, that these will be my personal views based on my research over the last 30 years or so, and I'm not representing NASA or speaking for the government.
Appreciate that, and thank you for clarifying. You say that there are clear-cut dangers from further delay in curbing our carbon dioxide emissions. Exactly what are those dangers? We've talked about them, you know, here at EcoTalk, but you are in a unique position to really tell us directly.
Well, we're in the midst of a global warming trend now, which has been induced by increasing greenhouse gases. I think so far, the global warming is about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit, which, you know, is much smaller than day-to-day weather fluctuations, but the discerning person can perhaps notice that seasons are warmer than normal more often than they used to be a few decades ago.
My cousins in Rochester say there's no snow on the ground, or there wasn't recently, and the fall colors are happening slower, later, less so.
Yeah, and this is an unusually warm year in the U.S., at least last month in the U.S., but the global temperature has increased, as I mentioned, 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit, with most of that in the last 30 years. And there's another 1 degree Fahrenheit that's already in the pipeline, because even if we stopped increasing greenhouse gases tomorrow, we would get another degree Fahrenheit because of the slow response time of the system. But the dangers, well, one of them is becoming clear already, and if we go another 10 years with business as usual, it will be unavoidable, and that's the loss of the Arctic as we know it. Already in the summer and fall, there's a reduction of about 25% in the amount of sea ice, but if we keep increasing the greenhouse gases, we will lose all of the ice there in the summer and fall. And, of course, the species that live there, like polar bears and the seals on the ice and the reindeer on the frozen tundra, will not be able to survive in the changed habitat. So that's a pretty major change. And it also, a little bit further down the line, there are even changes that would be much more have impact directly on people, and I'm thinking particularly on the stability of the ice sheets, both Greenland and West Antarctica. If we, you know, I've tried to define a scenario in which we would slow down the growth of these, what we call climate forcings, but which are primarily greenhouse gases, especially carbon dioxide, such that we could keep the global warming over and above that today less than 1 degree Celsius, which would be less than about 2 degrees Fahrenheit. But if we did that, You see, today the temperature has already reached a level near the maximum of the current interglacial period. That means the last 10,000 years. If we look at the longer history of the Earth over the last 700,000 years, there have been a couple of times when it was a bit warmer than this, but at most 1 degree Celsius warmer than now. If we follow a business as usual with continuing increases in the rate of emissions of these gases, then we will get warming of 2.5 or 3 degrees Celsius within 100 years. That would be warmer than it has been since the middle Pliocene, about 3 million years ago. And at that time, sea level was at least 25 meters higher. There's a geological feature you can see along the east coast of the United States, which is called the Orangeburg Scarf. That's the shoreline that existed 3 million years ago. And it's about 100 kilometers inland at most places. And Florida was underwater then. So that's where we would be headed. Not that we would get that sea level rise in 100 years. It takes the ice sheets centuries to respond, but they can respond as much as several meters per century.
Let me ask you this. Did you hear anything in the State of the Union address that makes you think it will not be business as usual in terms of curbing our emissions and use of fossil fuels, particularly oil?
Well, there are technology developments that were mentioned and which, on the long run, would contribute to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And I'm referring both to sequestration of carbon dioxide at power plants and a next-generation nuclear power. So those are two things that may become helpful in a decade or two. And, you know, it's not for me to specify what is a good policy and what is a bad policy, because that involves many factors.
Sure.
All that I can do is discuss what the impact of different policy choices are on the climate, and in particular, the thing that I think is very important is that in order to achieve a scenario in which we keep the warming less than 1 degree Celsius, and I think that's essential to avoid both loss of the Arctic and instability of the ice sheets, we would need to level out the emissions this decade. We can't go another decade with 2% per year increases in CO2 emissions, because that amounts to 25% after 10 years, and then it would become impractical to keep warming under 1 degree.
Okay, we have to mention that you were speaking in San Francisco in December, and it was after that speech in which you spoke about the fact that we do have existing technology, particularly what's possible with our motor vehicles emissions. And after that, you were, I don't know if muzzled or silenced is too strong, but there was some pressure on you to kind of tone it down. What do you think's behind that?
Well, there are political appointees in the Public Affairs Office at NASA headquarters, and they just became very upset about the fact that I had connected the dots all the way from emissions to climate change and to future impacts of that change. And
oh, it's a connecting of the dots. That's a bad thing to do, isn't it? I mean, this is absurd here. This is so alarming. And, of course, as you're saying, the important thing is that we must act. So how can this kind of, you know, revelation be squashed?
Pardon?
I'm just wondering, you know, how can we afford to let anybody, you know, quiet anybody who's trying to get more Americans alarmed?
Well, yeah, I think particularly in the case of a NASA scientist, because the first line in our mission statement is to understand and protect our home planet. So that's the reason. And I think to do that, it's become clear that we have to talk to the public. I haven't cleared this with counsel. I don't know that I should say this, but the problem that we have is that special interests seem to have so much sway on on what's happening. I can say that, for example, I gave a talk at ExxonMobil headquarters to a group of all the major automobile manufacturers.
Excuse me, Mr. Hansen, we're just about out of time. Can you stay with us for a couple of minutes into the next segment? We won't keep you too long because we have another great guest, but I want to hear this thought. You're listening to Eco Talk on Air America Radio. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. We are in conversation with NASA's chief climate scientist, Jim Hansen, talking about some things that are very relevant to your life and everybody else. So tell them to come listen to the radio. This is important stuff. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Eco Talk, and when it's gone, it's gone. In just a couple minutes, we're going to check in with the author of a very timely book just out called 1,000 Barrels a Second. Peter Terzakian will be joining us to talk about how much oil we have left, and of course, that's very timely with the State of the Union address. Equally timely is an interview we're just concluding with Jim Hansen. He is wonderfully generous to give us some time. He's a very busy man, chief climate scientist for NASA. Many requests for interviews after a cover story in the New York Times are on Sunday. He was talking about, right before we went to break, what might be behind some of this effort to silence the reality of what we're facing? Perhaps some lobbying? Maybe the auto industry?
Well, if I could just complete that little story, I asked the question of these automakers, why don't you try to get ahead of the curve and follow the suggestion of the National Research Council, which said that technology is available to improve auto efficiency by 30%. Which would allow us to get the climate forcing curve onto what I call the alternative scenario and avoid the largest climate change. And the response was, Dr. Hansen, we have to give the consumers what they want. Mm. And they want larger cars with more power and better performance. But then when I went back to my room that evening and turned on the television, I found the advertisements for which showed these vehicles, you know, on the top of a mountain peak. It had obviously been lifted there by a helicopter, but with this beautiful view of the American West. So what they really use the car for is to go to the grocery store and drive to work, not drive to the top of the mountain.
Exactly. And they've been saying that Americans don't care about fuel efficiency. They were saying that for years, but that's clearly not true anymore.
Not true, right. But the bottom line seems to be that they're more interested in short-term profits than in the long-term planet that we hand over to our children.
How ironic that, you know, the ones that are the biggest makers of gas guzzlers, GM and Ford, are, you know, massive layoffs and, you know, reduction in the value of their stocks and junk bonds. I mean, you know, so many people saw it coming. People in the environmental organizations I work with, NRDC, Union of Concerned Scientists. Right. We Mothers started a group 4 years ago called Don't Be Fueled, Mothers for Clean and Safe Vehicles, grassroots effort to raise awareness about the need for fuel efficiency. So perhaps we are seeing a tipping point.
Well, let's hope so.
Let's hope so. Thank you so much for joining us, Jim Hansen. He is a longtime director at the Goddard Institute for Space Studies at NASA. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. Go to www.ecotalk.net.